Good evening, Razorback fans. Welcome to the one, the only Hog Talk podcast, live from the Sterling Soap and Roastery Studios, part of the Believe in Buzz Radio Networks, where you can hear us on 106.7 in Central Arkansas. And all live shows are presented to you by Arkansas Brewing Company in downtown Ozark. I am Porter Hayes, and alongside me is Adam Hall. And we are also brought to you by Bet Online. Continues to be the fastest and easiest way to place your wagers, including live betting and your favorite casino and card games, available to play right from your phone. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and get in on the action. Remember to use the promo code BLEAV for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, where the game starts. And we're talking about before the show, another week, another SEC loss. Adam, I mean, it's getting, I mean, look, we're going to continue to do the show weekly, but man, it's getting hard to come on here and talk about the same stuff week after week, because that's what's going on with this basketball program. They get a win and then they lose, and then it's another 20-point loss. We're seeing signs of just, you know, it's drama and you know, on the court, off the court. Now we're seeing a chink in the armor maybe, and we'll get into that later. We're seeing some on-the-court stuff, and it might mean nothing, it might, but with the times and the with the program, it's worth discussing. But, man, what's your thoughts just of when you think this can kind of sort of get turned around and everybody thinks, well, we've got this drama out the way, let's turn things around, and it just goes right back to normal?
You know, that's what you hope for after you get a win, you know, against at Missouri. You've kind of gotten the drama on the back burner. You've found out some things that were put out there were false, spread by Missouri forums and what have you. So, you know, you hope that they could put together, you know, two wins in a row and then let's build from there. And then they just came out absolutely flat. And I say that they came out, you know, they started the game. There was some, you know, some tempo. They had some swagger about them. And then LSU just went on a little run. I forget the guy's name, Baker maybe.
Yeah, Baker.
Yeah. And he, I mean, started off like 7 for 9 or 7 for 7 before he missed his first shot. I mean, he was just, there's always that one guy, and it never fails, that just has a career game. Mm-hmm. And it just came at the wrong time.
I know, it's funny. It's like you listen to the Arkansas media, and I'm not picking on them whatsoever, but, you know, it's almost like the commentator curse, that kicker that has been 4 for 4 in this setting, in this playoff, now he misses it. It's like the Arkansas media said, well, this guy's been 2 for 6, and now he's 4 for 5. It's like, okay, it happens every single week. And, yeah, Baker went off. I mean, it was just, you thought that Arkansas, again, would just fight and claw, but it's just, it's almost like they're holding on to the rope, and then once a team gets ahead, they just let go. They don't claw back. I don't know of a game where it shows you're getting beat by 20. You're never clawing back, you know?
Yeah. I think maybe there's been, you know, a couple of times. I want to say that the Georgia game on the road, we got down, I mean, almost 20-20, and then they clawed back, you know, right at maybe 8-9 points in the second half, and then Georgia just ran away with it. And that was about the only time that I can think of, because kind of once you've gotten down 12, 14, 16 points, it's just like you're never creeping back to that 10-point mark.
Yeah. You know, you're sitting at 11-11 right now, 2-7 in conference play. So if you look at the schedule, I'm just going to scroll down real quick and see where we're at. You've only got 9 games left. So you would have to, you could only lose one or two more.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and then that would put you, and then that's going, you know, 7-2 in the last 9 games. You would have to do that to put yourself even.
I mean, they've really put themselves in a spot that you have to win the SEC tournament. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no ifs, ands, or buts.
Oh, yeah.
But now it's, you know, it's like, you're on the verge. If you're not already there, you're not making the NIT. And then if they still have that CBI tournament, which is even lower than the NIT, I know there's not as many teams that go to that one, college basketball invitational, but you know, you're trying to get through to the end of the season and just start going for next year.
Well, that's the thing. You have to, because you look at the remaining schedule. You still got to play Tennessee. You still got to play at Texas A&M, Vanderbilt, at Kentucky, LSU, and at Alabama. That, man, I don't see two wins there, but much less going 7-2. Mm-hmm. And it's the time and kind of transitioning into what we talked to about beforehand was the fact that I see 50-50 on this issue with the Mitchell Musselman thing. And you know what? If it was a fight, you know, if it was a close game or, you know, Arkansas's, their record is totally different than what it is right now. You know, you're sitting at 7-1 instead of 1-7. Mm-hmm. Maybe we look at these things a little differently, but with everything going on, I mean, you're sitting 2-7. 2-7 in the conference instead of 7-2, you know? We might be looking at this differently, but it's hard for me to not, with everything that's going on, and then just the way Musselman handled the Devo situation with, we're going to leave it to the press release. We're going to leave it to the press release. And I'm not saying go into details on what happened. That's none of our damn business. But at least be like, hey, he's not eligible to come back, or hey, he can come back. If you can answer those types of things. But to completely shut it out and shut the media out of that part of it, it leaves the window open. And now you see all this stuff coming to light and all these rumors. What you think you're doing to help protect your team and your locker room, it's making it worse. Because now all these big rumors come out and all this stuff's being said. And I don't care if it's true, false, what, it's out there. And you just got done being the laughingstock of the NCAA and football. Now for a week's time, you're the laughingstock of basketball. I mean, if you got Barstool looking into this, which Jack McGuire did a great job on that, you know, but still you've got everybody just talking about you in a negative light. You should come to the defense and be like, hey, look, you know, he left the program and he's not coming back, or he might come back, or, you know, anything to kind of close the door on that.
Yeah, there's frustration all around. You know, going back to the Mitchell and Musselman stuff on the court, I mean, there's obviously frustration there. We all know that Musselman is fiery and very animated whenever he's on the sideline. And Mitchell apparently didn't like whatever was said, or didn't like, which, you know, after the game, you know, Musk kind of came to his defense on it a little bit in the post game, but at the same time, you know, I'm seeing a lot of, like, this wouldn't happen if we were, you know, if it was this coach or that coach. And I just kind of look at it like Cambers just weren't around then as much as they are now. So it's kind of, you don't know that necessarily. But, you know, there are some things that I don't know if he just doesn't know what to say when it comes to, you know, the whole Devo situation. Yeah. But, I mean, he doesn't, and like you said, he doesn't have to say anything, but you could just nail the coffin shut and be done with it so there's not speculation anymore.
Exactly.
But I know there's been sex speculation, too, with, you know, the representative for Devo coming out saying he's still going to do this Thursday noon interview.
Well, if you're in a contract. Forward.
We've talked about that before with, you know, the contracts between players and these businesses when they leave, what happens. And I mean, we're potentially about to see what happens.
And that's going to make it, you know, very awkward, you know, and we talk about this name, image, and likeness, and yeah. And I grant it, you're from Jacksonville. Guatney has been a huge dealership down in Central Arkansas since the early 90s. And the fact that he's still going on, that's that part of that contract, and that's part what we talk about with. We'll get into the recruit that signed his national letter of intent and then backed out of that. You know, I'm iffy on that one because look, we're training, and this is kind of like what I try to teach my sons. You know, I am trying to prepare you to be men, and when you get out of the real world and you get out on your own, you're on your own. And I'm trying to teach them, you know, whether they like it or not, it's like, hey, look, I'm trying to prepare you for when you face this situation as an adult. And you look at that situation with the football player, he signed a contract. All right. If we sign a contract with our cable bill, if we sign a contract with our trash bill, and we're like, well, we want out of it, you're going to have to pay the rest of that remaining balance, or they're going to send you to collections. I mean, that's where we're at on that. But going back to the whole on the court stuff, yeah, I know cameras are everywhere. And it's tough because I know we're playing in a, you know, it's competitive and we're talking about these athletes and frustrations. But when you see nothing but dejection and see nothing but frustration and you see nothing but negative energy, you look at that and it's magnified.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's where I see that.
Yeah, and I mean, I totally see where that's coming from. I mean, whenever I watched it, I just immediately thought, like, this isn't a good look. And because my mind is just immediately, like, all the drama that the team's already surrounded on. But then I understood it to an extent. Now, back in the day, I mean, you know, playing at Northside, did I see players getting to yelling matches with coaches a time or two in practice, never in a game? And it was one of those things that when it happened, it wasn't a good outcome for the player. But, you know, it's got a completely different day and age with that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying players today deserve more or have any more of a voice than they did back in the day. It's just we're dealing with a different type of athlete, I feel like, mm-hmm. now.
Yeah.
And it's not a shot at them by any means.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, at this day and age, I mean, it's a lot more vocal. It's a lot more of what I want, what I need, which is, I mean, a prime example of what we see with – NILs and transfer portals. It's what benefits me right now.
Yeah. And you look at what Dave Van Horn said when he was talking about that press conference. Look, and people can take this the way they want to. My view on it is, was he taking a subtle shot at other programs in their locker rooms? Probably. But he said, we don't have egos here.
Mm-hmm.
And Dave Van Horn, he'll throw you off quicker than you signed on. You can quicker than you. And I've talked to people mm-hmm. with, you know, Cabo, one of our good friends inside of the program. He knows how Dave Van Horn is. He is not afraid to tell somebody you're done no matter what. And the fact that I don't know if it's because there's so much pressure on other, I mean, look at the pressure Musselman's in the first year he's faced adversity since he's been here. Look at mm-hmm. Sam Pittman, the adversity. Maybe there's a lot of pressure. So you have to, you know, your hands are tied behind your back more now, especially with NIL and transfer portals. I mean, you don't want to piss somebody off and they're just going to leave. You know, I know there's a lot of pressure, but you know what? This is the thing. You have a staff and you're paid $1 million to figure this out.
100%.
That's, you know, so yes, a lot of it is on today and the kids and blah, blah, blah. But you know what? If you want to win and you want to be successful, people are winning national championships every year. It ain't like nobody's winning anymore. People are figuring out how to win. And you look at program, look at UConn, look mm-hmm. what they've done. You buy into a system, but you got to buy into the system.
Well, I feel like that's what we saw, you know, with against Mizzou, like bouncing back. Even in the early first few minutes of the LSU game, I think even one of the commentators mentioned it on how, like, having the players out there that were buying into what Musselman is selling. There's such a small window, especially for basketball. Well, football too, but basketball, I feel like, especially because, you know, only two rounds in the draft, so few players, just the window is not there for these players, as many players as there are, that, you know, if you're going transferring to a team or signing on with a team at a high school, you know, you need to be prepared to buy what your coach is selling because you've only got, best case scenario, 1 year, worst case scenario, you know, 4 years, but you've got that little bit of time to make an impression for your future in playing sports, basketball.
Look at the quarterback for the Razorbacks this year. Was he an NFL type player?
No.
Okay. So look how much money he's making in college.
Mm-hmm.
Who wouldn't?
Well, that's one thing you saw a lot of, and especially with And this goes to the women's side of things, but I know last season there was a lot of talk with Angel Reese and how much that she was making from NIL money. She'd be making more walking into, you know, any WNBA locker room. And she knew that that would look negatively based on the money that she was making in the NIL versus what her salary would be in the WNBA.
She would be making more on marketing and shoe contracts than her salary at the, you know, there's so many WNBA players that had to play overseas, you know, to make it. And I'm not even going to get in debate about the whole contract. It's just what they're making is what they're making. Yeah, yeah, she is making, but she is one of the, whether you like it or not, her and Caitlin Clark are the face of women's college basketball right now. Women's college basketball has grown because of those two players. I mean, Aaliyah Boston, South Carolina, there's a lot of people. And I'm not saying that, you know, Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese is one and two, but they're two of the biggest reasons. And I would say that Caitlin Clark is one of the biggest reasons.
Did you see what her trading card sold for?
No, I didn't.
It's like $77,000.
That's insane.
It was an autograph, like one of one that came out of the Bowman used. Yeah, $77,000.
Yeah, and that is the way that where we're heading. And I love to see it. But you look at, you can compare the amount of successful basketball programs that fill the stadiums to the amount of baseball stadiums that budget in the green. We talked about that last week. And that's the biggest problem. And you know, the way the WNBA is marketed, they're setting themselves up for failure. I mean, I have no sympathy on the WNBA because of the owners and the CEOs and the owner of the chairman of the WNBA, just they don't know how to market it. You know, they don't know how to really capitalize on what's coming in too with Aaliyah Boston and Caitlin Clark. Of course, they're going to stay in college.
Yeah. I mean, the WNBA is basically sitting on the treasure chest, if you will, if they would learn how to market some of these players coming in. Obviously, they need to still take care of the ones who are currently there. But, you know, they've got a line of, you know, these women's basketball players coming in that could make them bukus of money if they would just, you know, look a little bit to kind of what, you know, and if you don't want to look at the NBA, I get it. But at the same time, WNBA kind of needs to look at how they market these, you know, potential phenoms that are coming into the league.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, because you have to, I mean, you have to make them the face of your company if you're wanting to grow in this right here. Says, did you see the meme showing Caleb Williams and the money he makes versus what Brock Purdy makes?
Okay. Let's go back to this because I don't know how many times I've seen this. And this just, okay. So NIL valuations are not what these guys are making in college. That meme that was going around all started from a guy on X. And if you actually went to the original tweet, and then followed his replies, because he answered a lot of replies. He knew that he worded it that way on purpose. But that is not money that has been walked away with by these. I think actually Arch Manning was the main one that the post originated with. But these NIL valuations are not what these guys are making. And so I'm not saying that they're not making a crap ton of money, because they are. But, you know, to think that Arch Manning was making $2 to $4 million being third string in Texas is crazy. Yeah. He wasn't.
Well, and they're just, it's almost like you're what someone's net worth, you know, they're not, they don't have that much money because of everything they got tied into other things, but how much that person's actually worth, that evaluation is how much they're getting or how much their NIL deal is worth. Yeah. And, but it is funny because I know college players are making, some are making more than, but look at the longevity. How much is that college money going to last? How much is Caleb Williams going to make in the NFL? I'd guarantee you 10 years down the road, he is not in the NFL. Or if he's
coming in demanding an ownership stake in whatever team drafts you is just, I mean, I think that's crazier to look at than what, you know, you've proven nothing. Except, okay, you won a Heisman last year. Congrats. I mean, I applaud that. But to automatically demand you know, a small percentage ownership stake in whatever team drafts you. Mm-hmm. You know, if we thought Eli demanding, you know, to not play for the Chargers was a big thing, like, this is 10 times worse than that is.
Yeah, and I could kind of see it does suck because it is a draft, but I can see why you wouldn't want to go play at a crap program. You know, who mm-hmm. wants to go be a quarterback for the Jets right now, or who wants to go be a quarterback for the Raiders right now? Mm-hmm. You know, you want to go to the ones like the Ravens and, or I mean, back up to, you know, Mahomes or Jackson or Purdy, you know. And I guarantee you right now, you laugh about that statement about Brock Purdy. He wins a Super Bowl. Guess what his contract's going to go up to?
Oh, yeah.
He's going to be making $20 million a year.
And I'll be the first one to say that, talking about, you know, these players that come in for teams that have, you know, good quarterbacks, I never thought Jordan Love would see the light of day.
Yeah.
You know, especially falling to third string while Rodgers was there and everything. You know, it looked like he wasn't going to make it up off the bench, let alone second string. And then here he is leading them into the playoffs. You know, that's one thing that I didn't see coming, but kudos to him.
And Baker Mayfield's the same way. I thought he was going to be done. You know, he mm-hmm. was like a Johnny Manziel, or, you know, honestly, I know it's going to hurt your feelings, but I thought Lamar Jackson was the same way. You know, because look, how many guys
said coming out when Lamar got drafted coming out, I didn't see it happening. I didn't see him becoming what he is now.
Yeah.
Heisman or not, I just didn't see that future.
You look at very few, like Randall Cunningham, Michael Vick. You know, I'm trying to think over the years of who's really made a career before Lamar Jackson.
I mean, give up Warren Moon, Randall Cunningham, yeah. Mike Vick. I mean, you've got
there's
to go back.
Three right there.
I mean, McNabb ran when he had to, but he wasn't the most mobile, but his arm made up for that.
That's okay. But I would put him on that level of he's mm-hmm. he made a career. But you look at, I mean, who was the one that was out of Georgia, went to Quincy Carter? Was that the one that was out of Georgia that went to Dallas?
Yeah.
And I forgot about you look him. At That's guys like that. Yeah. But you look at guys like that showed so much promise. Then you look at the Johnny Manziels and these people, Tim Tebow, mm-hmm. considered one of the greatest college football players ever. He couldn't make it. I mean, he won one playoff game, but, you know, you had a killer defense. But it's just mm-hmm. like you just look at what the college game, now they've had to adapt, and you see a lot more now. College is catching up to the pro. On that, that's why you're seeing guys like Trevor Lawrence, Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, these guys that are now making a name for themselves and having good careers, Baker Mayfield, because you see the gap between you running similar stuff in college and pros. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
But I got a report here showing 124 left. Arkansas is up 2 on Auburn. They went on a 15-0 run. Talia Scott back in full form. I mean, what a gem. You talking about somebody
31
right now. Mm-hmm. She missed like 5 or 6 games, I believe. That's another team when we talk about the ups and downs. You know, you're sitting right there hovering on 500 in the SEC, and we talked about before the show, you're going to mm-hmm. have to be above 500 to make the NCAA tournament. So all these games moving forward, you know, it's very, very important when you talk about making, because we know the status of this team and what pressure is on this team to win and make it. You don't just make the tournament. You got to win a tournament.
You got to win
game.
The game. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You just have to. You're sitting at 16-7 overall, 4-4 right now. So if you win this game, you're 5-4 in conference. If you lose, now you're 4-5 in conference, and you have 8 games left. So you have 8 games left. So you still plenty of time or 7. You got Florida, Tennessee, Missouri, Texas A&M, Vandy, South Carolina, and Ole Miss, which those last 3 games are going to be brutal just because of what Vanderbilt has been able to do. But you think about it, and we'll talk about this after the break. We're going to take a quick commercial break, but we're going to talk about the similarities with the problems between the men's and women's basketball team, and then we'll finish it off a little baseball talk and 12 days, 11 days away from, but we'll be right back after the break. Attention DIYers and home improvement enthusiasts, are you searching for the right tools and the supplies to tackle your next project? Look no further than Mentor's Hardware Store. With locations in Ozark, Alma, and Clarksville, our vast selection of hardware and building materials is sure to have everything you need, whether you're fixing a leaky faucet or building a new deck. Plus, our knowledgeable staff is always on hand to offer expert advice and guidance. And with our competitive prices and convenient online ordering, Mentor's Hardware Store is your one-stop shop for all your DIY needs. Visit us today, and let's build something amazing together. Are you in need of legal representation? Look no further than the law offices of Robertson, Beasley, Shipley, and Robinson. As the oldest law firm in the River Valley, we have been serving our clients for over 100 years, with locations in Ozark, Fort Smith, and Springfield. Our experienced team of attorneys provide expert guidance and advocacy in a wide range of legal areas, including personal injury, family law, criminal defense, and more. Trust in our history and experience to get the results you deserve. Contact the law offices of Robertson, Beasley, Shipley, and Robinson today at 479-782-8813. That's 479-782-8813. Are you looking for a place to grab a cold drink and some delicious food? Look no further than Arkansas Brewing Company. Located at 201 South 1st Street in beautiful downtown Ozark, our establishment offers a wide selection of craft beers and tasty eats. But what sets us apart is our welcoming atmosphere and friendly staff. At Arkansas Brewing Company, you'll always feel like part of the family. So visit Destiny and Christopher Brockett and staff today and see for yourself what makes us the go-to spot for locals and visitors alike. Arkansas Brewing Company, come for the drinks and stay for the friends. Searching for premium brewery products that will take your daily routine to the next level? Look no further than Sterling Soap Company. Our handmade soaps, aftershaves, and balms are made with only the finest ingredients that give you the ultimate grooming experience. With a variety of scents to choose from, there's something for everyone. Plus, our products are crafted in small batches to ensure the highest level of quality. So why wait? Visit www.sterlingsoap.com or visit our retail store at 16 West Walnut Street in Paris, Arkansas. Shop our collection and discover the difference for yourself. Upgrade your grooming routine with Sterling Soap Company. And want to welcome you back to the Hog Talk Podcast. Thank you, Brad, for the updates on the women's basketball game. Now, I got stats broadcast pulled up so we can follow along. Auburn took a timeout with 37 seconds left. Arkansas's up 72-69. Talia Scott has 31, but I quickly want to get into it while we're watching the final moments of this game. But women's and the men's team have a lot of problems when it comes to guard play. Guarding the guards, defending the three, because Grayson Scott has 24 against Arkansas. And I've seen this year after year after year. I've even asked Mike this question every year. What is it about the guard play that you just allow so many points? I mean, whether you're playing UFIS or ULM, it's always, no matter the type of team you're playing, the guards. And I see that similar with the men's. You got guys like Baker going off. Guys, you know, Texas A&M, you know, they're just going off on Arkansas, and a lot of it's the perimeter. A lot of it is the three-point defense.
I feel like that, and I'm not going to say it's always been an issue for Arkansas, but it seems like that we're always so – I don't want to use the term heavy with offensive players. I just don't feel like anymore that you just have – you get those lockdown defenders.
Yeah.
I think Layden Blocker has that potential. I think he's shown that several times, but for, you know, whatever the case may be, you know, there's some games he doesn't play much. There's other games he's in there, you know, 20 plus minutes, and that time I think will grow. But it seems like everything is so offensive driven that we really just don't see a guard that, men's or women's, that they don't worry about offense, that all they do is defense and then facilitate the ball.
Yeah, and that you nailed it right there we talk about, you know, especially with the women's team. You know, you have a lot of scoring, and when they shoot, they send 3-4 players back. They don't even really emphasize, and Auburn just hit a three-pointer, 74-72 with 17 seconds left in that one. But, yes, it's similar to – and you look at Blocker, it's like what's going on where – and – I can't remember what guard it was that – I want to say it was L. Ellis, the one that, I mean, he's doing really good, and then he just goes on the bench, and you don't see him. And it's that is where I'm like, what's going on behind closed doors? What's going on in practice? But you know what? When you're in the position where you're at with this mids team, and you've got guys that you know are playing, you've been through 12 or 13 different starting lineups, why not play who's playing well? I mean, if you're not doing it in practice, but who else is? You know, that's where you're in a predicament. You need to play who you know is going to produce on the court. And if Blocker's giving it to you, Ellis is giving it to you, Battle's giving it to you, you got to play those guys.
I think that we've seen, well, obviously this team this season's under much more of a microscope. And then years previously, you know, Musk keeps his 7 to 8 player rotations and that's it. But since nothing has been working this season, he's running everybody on the bench to see, besides the walk-ons, to see what's going to work, who's going to work. You know, we saw, I forget what game it was, that Pinion, Breeson, 2 or 3 games ago, Pinion came out and had, I think, 12 off the bench. Yeah. And then we didn't see him the next game at all. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, you know, I like I've said multiple occasions on different outlets that, you know, I have personally called out Pinion's defense. But that's it. I've said the same thing since he was in high school. But at the same time, when your team's not playing any defense as it is, put somebody out there that's going to score. And, you know, I know that like a game or two ago, like he got in for 2 minutes. He had one shot that he missed. And it's like shooters need to get in rhythms. Mm-hmm. You know, pulling somebody to the bench because of one miss, you know, isn't really how to get somebody in rhythm. But I know we saw the same thing last year with Jalen Graham, that he would have a great game for him, you know, come in with either in the teens. I know there, if I remember right, there's even one game he was at around 26, I think was his high. And then we didn't see him for 2 or 3 games, or he came in and then got pulled because of a boneheaded play. And I think that there's just that short leash or something happens that we just don't see the players.
And I think that that's part of, you know, I'd seen some of the ones talking about, you know, the Mitchell thing, and it's like it wasn't his fault on some kind of turnover or something. And I think coach took him out and he took offense to that. And, you know, I can kind of see, look, if in from what they were, their angle was of it, it wasn't his fault. And
yeah,
at the time, it's again, it goes to the situation. Like you're playing well, it's cutting it close. Why take him out over a bonehead play? I mean, you're struggling, and then you end up – so it's almost like you look at the Pinion thing, and this is where I'm going to go with the coach for a second. The Pinion thing, was that a thing because he was catching so much junk on social media? I'll put him in, and then I'll let him play. Look what he did. Now you don't see him again. And then this issue, like, is he that stubborn that he wants to prove a point that you're not going to talk to me that way? I'm going to sit you on the bench. And if we lose by 20, we lose by 20.
For a split second, you know, I thought whenever I saw the encounter with Muss and Mitchell, I was like, we're not going to see him the rest of the game. Mm-hmm. I wholeheartedly thought that we weren't going to see him, especially when they came back from the timeout, from the TV break. They showed, you know, Mitchell sitting there kind of tested on the bench. And I was like, oh, he's done. But he came back in shortly thereafter, which was a surprise. But then I think that goes back to, it's kind of like you don't have anybody else that has proven, you know, this season that they can hang for the, you know, the rest of the game.
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing is, you know, when you're talking about moving forward and what's going to happen with this team, I see a major overhaul, but it looks like you better bring some people in that you know are going to the NBA, and you better bring back some people with defense because – that's why everybody was so excited about Devo coming back. He was a defender. He was a lockdown guy. He wasn't looked to as a scorer. And you look at Anthony Black's deal when Nick Smith Jr. was out. He was as the number two guy, and he was looked at as that number one guy. It took him out of his rhythm, and it affected his gameplay. I mean, he was still putting up great numbers, but you see when Nick Smith Jr. come back, he was a different player. Look at the Devo situation. He's used to making one or two great plays, being a lockdown defender, coming up in clutch. Now you're having to be a leader, and I think it, you know, kind of got the best of him when it comes to being that leader. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it is what it is, and we, like I said last week, we've moved on from it and wished him nothing but the best, you know. But I just know that there's going to be a lot of changes that need to be done with this basketball mm-hmm. team, and it sucks that we're saying this and we're, you know, 12 days away from baseball. But, yeah, I think everybody, you could ask 80% of the fans if they're checked out on basketball, and we are. We're checked out. We don't think there's an NIT, so it's almost like losing your first three, four mm-hmm. games in September, yeah. October with the football team. You're like, well, we suck again. So, but I don't think this anything about the program. It's just this year was a bad year.
Yeah, and it really was. And, you know, I'm mentally, you know, just kind of drained and checked out from it. Am I still going to watch? Yes, I'm still going to watch. I get asked why I put myself through it sometimes, but
you're still a fan. But you're still a fan, though, you know, and yeah. look at it. So, but real quick.
And it's one of those I can mute the game and just leave it on and just mess around on my phone or do stuff around the house, whatever.
Yeah.
But I'm going to watch the entirety of the game.
Real quick, we'll cut in. Arkansas won 74-72. Auburn had two chances at the buzzer, a missed layup, offensive rebound, and then a missed jumper. So Arkansas gets the win over Auburn and moves to 5-4 in conference. I mean, huge. With that game against Alabama, you needed that win. To lose that by 16 points, to come back and win in Bud Walton Arena against Auburn. You go to Florida on Thursday, and then you can go to Tennessee. So the next 2 weeks are going to be very crucial when you look at two road games. You play three of the next four on the road: Florida, Tennessee, Texas A&M, and you have Missouri at home. So really going to test Florida. They've really played very well against, but I'm telling you, you go to Tennessee on Monday, February 12th, and you got to deal with Rekia Jackson. And it seems like every year, Aaliyah Boston, Rekia Jackson, Ryan Howard, Shakira Austin that was with Ole Miss, you deal with that type of player, Cardoso out of South Carolina. They just give them fits, and I expect Rekia to have 25-30, but if you can limit the others around her, you'll be all right. But you can't let the guards blow up and then Rekia get 30 as well.
Yeah, that's one thing that I've, you know, for especially the last several years, you know, the South Carolinas, the Baylor, all these other schools, they've had a post presence that you don't normally see in women's sports. And it's not just one player on each team. It's a combined, you know, all their fours and fives are just bigger than everybody else that the other team has ever had.
Well, you look at South Carolina. Everybody had them 6-10 in the preseason poll because they didn't understand what they had on the bench. It's almost like Duke and Kentucky. You're playing five All-Americans, but you got five All-Americans on the bench. Your fourth best post player last year was a freshman, Ashlyn Watkins, can dunk the ball. Mm-hmm. Then you bring in a freshman in Malaysia Fulwiley. Then you add on Cardoso and then Pitts. I mean, you've got a Tennessee length style team, and that's what South Carolina, that's what LSU, and that's what Tennessee's done. And you thought with Arkansas, and you look at, think about the team saying in their prime, in their peak, fully healthy, what this team could be like with Jersey and Sasha in with all that length. That's what we were talking about preseason, how this would really help the team this year, along with Miriam Dowda and Emory Ellis. But Emory was hurt first of the year. Now she's slowly transitioning back into the lineup. But you really miss the players, and that's happened every single year, it seems like, for the women's basketball team. But Talia's just – I seen her day one in practice, and just I knew she was going to be lights out. When you're playing with the likes of Juju Watkins and Michaela Williams – I mean, Malaysia Fulwiley, and you're putting on a show. I knew what she could mm-hmm. do, and I think, you know, seven games, 25-plus points, as this comment says right here, had 30 – let me see what she finished with. She finished with 33 points. On 11 of 23 shooting, by the way, and 6 of 12 from the three-point line, 5 for 5 from the free throw line. All-around great effort. Big win for the women's team. But you just wish for the other programs that you look at the two major programs, and we've said this and beat this with a dead horse. You want them to be successful because it leads to other programs getting more seats in their stands. Other than gymnastics and softball, because, well, I guess you could even say volleyball now. I'm really interested to see what happens next year with that volleyball program losing their core of their team off that Elite Eight run. But you really need the football program. You really need the basketball program to be successful in order for everything to be successful. Fan-wise, you know, they'll go to more games. And, of course, it doesn't help when the women's team's just kind of like the men's team. You're winning a game, losing a game. You got to have consistent success and have tournament wins if you really want to get up there to the – I mean, to get to 8,000, 10,000 people in a game, you're going to have to go make Sweet 16 runs. You're going to have to make it exciting for the fans to come watch you play. They, you know, they come to a hyped-up game, and then you lose by 20. Well – and it's much harder in women's sports. You know, you get built up, and then if you go on a two-game losing streak, well, we're done with them. They are who we thought they were kind of, you know. That's what it is. And I've followed it for 5 years now. But I'm not saying they're wrong for that, because until you're like the softball team or the soccer team that has continuously had success, the volleyball team, that are continuously having progress and being a top 10, top five program, you're not going to get people in the seats.
Yeah, and that's what you and me, we've talked about on here, but I think more off air with the women's, that, you know, it's going to take those consistent runs in the tournament, to get people there. I mean, I think right now there's, you know, 5,000 max that we're seeing, usually less, to five. And, you know, you hate it for them, but at the same time, it's kind of like you haven't won an SEC or a NCAA tournament game in how long?
Oh, goodness gracious, I can't remember.
I have no clue.
I can't remember the last time they have.
So it's just, you know, year after year of, you know, the same thing. It's just hard, and you hate it for the players that come in and put in the work. And I know we talked a lot before the season started, and we've talked with Coach Neighbors that we thought this was the year that, like, all these puzzle pieces were finally put together. And then you've got an injury, or you've got somebody stepping away, and it's just been, or you got somebody that's going to transfer, that we're going to be, you know, integral parts of this season, and you've got to figure out something else.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. All it's going to take is winning. We've seen it. I mean, but we've also seen it with the softball program when they've had success and then they lose. You know, I mean, they lose in a regional, like, well, what's going on? And you moving forward to baseball season, we've seen that even with this program. You know, even with as much success, take the track and field program out of the equation. Is the baseball program the most successful program on campus right now?
Yes.
So you take that program that is the most successful on campus program right now, winning, going to Omaha, doing all that. I mean, just – not the longevity, because baseball, you know, Dave Van Horn's been around a lot longer than Eric Musselman. But you can kind of, in a small window, compare it to what Eric Musselman's done. Because three Elite Eights, Sweet 16, or two Elite Eights, three Sweet 16s. And then he has one bad year, and sky's falling in. Arkansas could be undefeated, and they go play Little Rock and get beat 11-0. Sky's falling in. Because it's the panic mode, and that's kind of like what we talked about, was that their hopes get up, this team's going to be winning, they're going to win, and then they start losing, and all they do is go back into panic mode of, God, we suck again, and then they're thinking the worst, and they're saying the worst, because that's what they're used to.
Yeah, and, you know, I know we're prepared for, you know, baseball season to get here, and you bringing that up makes me just think back to years past, but I guess more recently. You know, we all know what the midweek games in baseball are for. It's for Dave Van Horn to mix some things up, change up his rotations, put some guys in some different positions to try things out. And it never fails that, you know, we lose one or two midweek games early on, may not be early on, and there's than people that have just ready to give it up, check out, they're done. We're not going to do this. And it's like, you know, especially in baseball when, you know, that's the true one that, you know, it's not a sprint when it comes to baseball. But I think that now there's going to be an added pressure on it because of football and basketball. You know, before it was the pressure of, you know, hey, the basketball team's got to the Sweet 16 or the basketball team's gotten to the Elite Eight and they fell short. So, you know, let's go get this in baseball. And then we don't make the College World Series or we get knocked out in the first round, you know, whatever it is. And so, I mean, it's just, we all put that hope up there and the aspirations for it. And then, you know, just, and we think that we feel let down, you know, that coach and those players feel it 10 times worse than we do.
Yeah. And you look at them, that brings up Mitchell. I mean, if he didn't care, he wouldn't be so vocal. You know, this is it for some of these guys. This, you look at even like guys like Devo, you think he really wanted to step away? I mean, he was kind of on the fence beforehand. And I know there's a lot of people that are saying, you know, he quit on the team. And, you know, it's almost like I can see their side of it from where they're looking at the fan. Okay, he's done this, and this is the second time he's done it. But I see the other side, too, of it. You know, look, we don't know what this guy's going through. And then on top of all this stuff, everything that's being said can be completely false. And now he's dealing with things that he didn't even ask for. And everybody keeps on bringing up the just because you have – I mean, are we in – I mean, I just want to ask one final question on this, and I'm not going to miss it. Are we, like, still in the 50s and the 60s in Arkansas? Like, you see somebody with colored hair, and you see somebody paint their fingernails. I mean, is this Leave It to Beaver?
We are like in the Brady Bunch. As a state, and I'm not calling out any individual person here, yes, people are set in their ways, ass backwards, if you will. You know, I get that times change, and sometimes people don't. But at the same time, it doesn't affect you. Why do you care so much?
Exactly. And the thing is, it's like, well, he had colored fingernails. That's why he played so bad. Like, that's a dig and that's a low blow because you know what? It's easy for you to say that because you're looking at their personal life. But let us turn that mirror around and let's go after you, what you're doing personally. And I guarantee you somebody found some dirt on them personally and brought up that, they wouldn't like it. And like I said, over hair and nails, that just blows my mind. Like it's 2024. Like, we're not back. That's what it seems like to me. It's like we're still stuck in the past. And then they wonder why we have problem getting recruits. We wonder why all these kids, we get certain players because they wanted to come play with them. But we wonder, and a part of it is the fans got to look themselves in the mirror and be like, damn. Is it really that bad? Is it really us? And sometimes it could be. I'm not saying every single recruit that don't come here is because of the fans, but I got to tell you, it's. I guarantee you it's a bigger percentage than what you're willing to admit and realize.
And I've asked, you know, numerous people, you know, I don't typically respond to a lot of comments I see out there, but there'd be comments here and there, you know, what's the hair color going to be? What's the nail color going to be? And it's just like, and the response from almost every single one is, well, I'm tired of talking about them losing. So that's what we're resorting to,
exactly.
More or less.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of like, I would rather sit here and carry on a conversation about the X's and O's of the game and what they did right and what they did wrong than hair color or nail color. If I was to sit there and, like you said, you know, or turn it around on them, whether it's them or their child who's an athlete, you know, they probably don't want to have those conversations. Yeah. But at the same time, they're willing to do it to, you know, whatever player. And, you know, back in the day, I know things were a little bit different back in the, you know, 90s, early 2000s. And granted, I know this is a person who's won multiple NBA championships, but, you know, Dennis Rodman got a pass years ago. Yeah, I mean, people just knew what he, you know, knew what he was, knew what he was about, and that was the end of it.
Yeah.
But now that you have a player or multiple players on your team that are doing something you just want to talk crap about it because they're not doing anything for you right now.
Oh, spot on. How many people have that picture of Devo doing the dunk against Auburn? Or how many mm-hmm. people looked at that, the post-game speech where he was in tears talking about how much this program means to him? And it's a bunch of Judases because mm-hmm. you're just so willing to turn your back on him of what he done. And it's still like, listen, it's the fact that – and you cannot be okay with how he left. You don't have to agree on how he left. That's perfectly fine. Everybody can mm-hmm. have that opinion. Man, it sucks he left. I hate that he left. You know, but when you, again, you go off to those personal attacks and you start talking about here, and that's the thing. Like, I'll hide every comment I see like that. I'm hiding because it's ridiculous and it's not warranted. And the thing is, if it reminds me of Major League, you know, when they were winning, everybody was cutting the sleeves off their shirts mm-hmm. and stuff. And it's like the same thing would happen. If they were winning, everybody would want to be that way. Mm-hmm. Everybody would be wanting to color their hair red. I mean, look at back in the 90s with the Nike swooshes and stuff cutting the back of, you know, it's like.
Yeah, I unfortunately went through that phase.
Yeah, but everybody did. But again, mm-hmm. the main thing is if it doesn't affect your life, somebody commented on that. You know, if it doesn't affect your life, then don't let it. Because all you. Do you think you getting upset about somebody else's life is affecting them? In the masses, it is, but your singular comment doesn't mean anything on it.
We just live in an age that, you know, it's one of those things that people do have the right to comment, think what they want, whatever. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that you always have to put it out there.
Exactly.
You know, it's one of those things that type your comment out and then, you know, I've said this about Facebook posts, comments, whatever, type it out and then read it back to yourself. Yep. And just let it sit for a second before you hit send. And I guarantee you that there'd be a lot of them that would get deleted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's like what, who was it? Herm Edwards. He was talking about, you know, the rookie symposium or whatever. Mm-hmm. We're talking about people coming in the NFL, you know, when you think you're going to tweet something, really think about it before you really hit it. So, but that was our soapbox moment of the week presented by Noska. But it is. It's one of the things that's easy to kick a dog while it's down. And the basketball team is down, and you don't want them to stay down, and you're frustrated. And that is okay because it does suck. It does suck for us to come on week after week, and you try to give hope. You try to see some kind of light, but there's not. And a lot of people don't want to hear that. But yet it's the truth. I don't see this team turning around and making the NCAA tournament or the NIT. It's just it's one of the things where we'll just move on to next year and see what happens. But to sit there and just want to throw away the whole program or think that, well, time's caught up to Eric Musselman. I've seen things, well, talent has caught up to Eric Musselman. The SEC's caught up to Eric Musselman and his schemes. But it might have.
At the same time, there are the folks that are still enjoying the basketball season because, mm-hmm. yes, I'll still be watching games, whatever. You know, those people that put out the positive comments or positive posts, you know, say we win Saturday against Georgia or whatever the case may be. You know, you don't have to then turn around and crap on their post or their comment because of what happened the rest of the
exactly.
season.
Exactly.
Like, yeah, let them live in this then? Win, yeah, this victory, exactly. and be done with it. No.
Well, I don't know if you've got anything else, but I think that will do it for this week's episode of Hog Talk Podcast, presented to you by Bet Online, Arkansas Brewing Company, and Sterling Soap and Roastery. We'll catch you all later on in the week as we'll probably break down some Super Bowl coverage, talk about some pro hogs that are going to be playing in the NFL, and we'll catch you later on this week.